Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8, Text 9. 7, 8, 9. Jahi, just give up. Asaram, demoniac. Bhavam, tendency. Imam, this. Tvam, you, my dear father. Atmanaha, of yourself, samam, equal, manaha, the mind, tatsva, make, na, not, santi, are, vidvashaha, enemies, rite, except, ajitat, uncontrolled, atmanaha, the mind, udpate, on the mistaken path of undesirable tendencies. Stitat, being situated. Tathi, that mentality. He, indeed, anantasya, of the unlimited Lord. Mahat, the best. Samarhanam, method of worship. Translation. Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoise toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, one then comes to the position of worshiping the Lord perfectly. Purport, this is by grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Unless one is able to fix the mind at the lotus feet of the Lord, the mind is impossible to control. As Arjuna says in Bhagavad Gita 6.4, Chanchalam himana Krishna pramati palavadradham tasyaham nigraham manye vayor eva sudushkaram. For the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, it seems to me, is more difficult than controlling the wind. For the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, it seems to me, is more difficult than controlling the wind. The only bona fide process for controlling the mind is to fix the mind by service to the Lord. We create enemies and friends according to the dictation of the mind. But actually, there are no enemies and friends. Pandita samadarshinaha samak sarveshu kuteshu madhaktim labhate param. To understand this is the preliminary condition for entering into the kingdom of devotional service. Dahyasuram bhavamimam tomahmana sammanmano tatsvana santi vidvashaha ritirajitad atmana utpate stitad taddhi hirantasya mahatsamaranam. Prahlad Maharaj continued, my dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoise toward everyone. Except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind, there is no enemy in this world. When one sees everything on the platform of equality, that one then comes to the position of worshiping the Lord perfectly. If it wasn't for the uncontrolled mind, we wouldn't have any problems in this world. Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, it's because of the mind that one's been in the material world since a time immemorial, accepting one material body after another. He says that the mind has fearsome, godlike powers over the soul. And in that instruction, and to back it up, he then tells the story of the Avanti Brahmana, who loses everything in life and then takes off on his own as a renunciate, and then is harassed by everyone he meets. But he doesn't take it personally. He says, if you bite your own tongue, who can you blame? So you're the one who bit it. So this verse has always been a stark realization that there's no one else to blame. One's responsible for one's own mind. This is the implication of Krishna giving so much instruction about the mind, that one must bring the mind under control. He says if it's unbridled, then self-realization will be very difficult work. And therefore, because Krishna says it, it's possible. This is the logic given by Srila Vyasadeva in the Vedanta Sutra, that the living entity is an agent for change. Because the Shastra says so, and because the Shastra is speaking to us, therefore, it's altogether possible. And sometimes the question comes up, how is it possible? This comes in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 13th chapter, when some sages were inquiring about how one could ever get free from the influence of the mind in this material world. And they asked Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma prayed for assistance and received the darshan along with the sages of the Hamsavatar. And the sages headed by Sanaka approached the Hamsavatar and asked, who are you? And he says, Hamsavatar replied, how do you mean that? If you're considering that I'm an ordinary conditioned soul, then what's the use of asking me who I am? Also, if you consider that my body is ordinary, that it's made of five elements, then you should have asked, who are you five, not who are you? He goes on to explain to them as a preamble that one should preliminarily understand that one is not the body when making an endeavor for spiritual life. And then Hamsavatar explains how we're entangled in the material world because the mind is embedded within the objects of the senses within the world. And the objects of the senses flow into the mind. This is how the material universe is set up. As mentioned in the first canto, second chapter of Bhagavatam, asav punamayera bhavera bhuta sukshmendriya midmi swamirmiteshu nirvisto punte bhuteshu tadgunan. That in the beginning of creation, the Lord created the subtle mind for the living entities to allow them to interface with the sense objects. And quite strikingly, Hamsa Avatar mentions how they're inextricably connected. The sense objects automatically flow into the mind, and the mind automatically goes to the sense objects in this world. In fact, Kapiladeva tells how a living entity, when taking shelter in the womb of a woman, begins to develop. The consciousness doesn't develop until 7 months. And at the time of 7 months, the soul becomes aware of the fact that he is entangled in the material body again. And then he begins to repent and lament that he's in this situation. And he prays to the Lord. If he's fortunate, Kapiladeva says he remembers 100 births that he's already taken. Then he's automatically pushed out of the birth channel by the powerful airs. And when he comes out into the world, he forgets that he had been praying to the Lord, because the senses immediately become externalized and they connect with their objects. Then he becomes surrounded by his so-called relatives who make a little name tag and then slap it on him and say, here's your new name. Your name is Schnicky. And so Hans Avatar says, one has to become fully aware of the futility of the engagement between the mind and the senses, and the senses and the mind. Krishna also gives a general statement about this in the 11th canto, when he says, Shruti pratyaksha maityam anumanam chatushpadam pramani shvananastanad vikalpat savirajite. That you should use four kinds of evidence to find out for yourself that this material world is unstable and that you're not part of it. That is Shruti, hearing from the Shastra. Pratyaksha, you should see for yourself. Anuman, make logical deduction. And Aityam, which traditional wisdom which is passed down. Anavastana means that it's not a stable situation that one's in. Vikalpatsa virajate, therefore one should renounce the material world altogether. And that's what's being recommended here. Only Hans Avatar goes on to explain that it's not possible to give up the senses altogether because they're eternally active, because the living entity has eternal senses. Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita, Nahi kashit shanamapi jatu tishchatya karma krit karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jayargunai. We are eternally active. However, he says that, as does this purport, one must learn that everything that one sees within the world is connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore engage it in His service. He explains also that the various states of consciousness we experience in this world are illusory. And he gives three stages of consciousness. One is wakefulness. This is caused by the mode of goodness. And then there's sleep with dreams. This is caused by the mode of passion. And then there's sleep with no dreams. This is caused by the mode of ignorance. But he says one should know that the living entity exists beyond these three states, and that the living entity should become aware of these three states and therefore see himself as separate from him. The living entity, he says, should become sakshitvena. Sakshitvena means that he should become a witness and see that he's moving through this world, moving through different states of consciousness, but actually, as the Vedas say, asanga khyayam purushaha, he has nothing to do with them, no actual connection. So in this sense, the mind is also just like a movie screen. And Yoga Sutra explains, because of my connection with the three modes of material nature, one life after another, I accumulate vrittis, or impressions, which then are projected onto the screen of the mind. And then I identify with that movie, just like if you go to a movie, a really good Bollywood movie, it's very absorbing. Then the lights go off and the movie screen comes on, and then you're carried away with great happiness to see all the dancing that takes place, right? And one also might begin to cry when the hero of the story dies or falls off a cliff and smashes his head. And then, oh. But actually, this is only watching light on a screen. So similarly, we're observing the mind. And not only that, the mind and my interaction with it is highly interpretive. There are three states of mind. The first is perception. The mind is an instrument for perceiving the world. And we actually don't perceive the objects in the world unless we become focused on them. Just like if you're reading a book and you're on a paragraph and then you're thinking about the fact that you forgot to email your best friend who emailed you last week and that he's going to be very angry at you. And you get to the bottom of the paragraph and you realize my eyes were in contact running down, but there was no perception. There was no understanding of what I read. So therefore, the senses have to be focused on their object in order to perceive them. Once I perceive the objects of the world, then there's a matter of interpretation. The mind interprets. And Krishna explains in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the mind becomes conditioned by various modes of nature, and therefore I interpret it in different ways, what I see. I interpret what I see in various ways. So it's not that we're... Epictetus, a Greek philosopher, said, we don't see the world the way it is, we see the world the way we are. And we interpret it in a certain way. Then, interestingly enough, the way we interpret it then gets signaled to my physical body. For instance, if you see your friend walking down the courtyard and he averts his eyes and keeps walking, you might think, oh, he hates me. Might you not think that? Say yes. So, say you see your friend, he looks away, and then think, oh, he hates me. And then suddenly become filled with emotion. What emotion? Shastrakrit? Anger. A little angry, a little morose, and the mind begins to spin, and then the body changes. And then I perceive that my body's changed, so then I think, oh, it must be a fact, because the body's going through changes. Just like if you put your shoes outside and you go out and you find that they're not there anymore, you might say, someone just stole my shoes. How do you feel? Angry, distressed, start thinking, why are people like this in the world? And then someone says, no, they're right over there. And then how do you feel? Kind of stupid. And then you might you feel okay. So the mind, the body have this connection through which I'm interpreting my environment according to the way my mind has become developed under its association with three modes of material nature. And there's a loop and a cycle through which I interpret, and then my body goes through changes, and then I reinterpret and think, oh, this must be true, and I become bound in a bodily conception of life. So Krishna says in the form of Hamsa that once you become free from this by seeing oneself as separate from this process of the mind. And this is, to achieve this, one must have a master. The mind has to have a master. The mind also has to have a goal. And it also has to have a schedule. These three things. It has to have a master, a goal, and a schedule. Or, I was thinking MSG, a master, a schedule, and a goal. It's easier to remember. Of course, MSG is not, it's not used very much anymore. So, if we accept a higher authority, and my mind is not reliable, it needs to be under control of a master. And one can understand through good reasoning that there are higher authorities. This is Jiva Goswami's argument in the Tattva Sandarbha, that one should accept the ultimate authority of the Shastra. And he explains why. Because he eliminates all other forms of evidence as being reliable. And therefore, if one can take shelter of Shastra and say this is axiomatic truth and follow it, and then take up with a person who is expert in following and explaining the Shastra, kind of like a spiritual attorney who's well-versed and can explain all the different aspects so that one can follow it. This is the beginning of bhakti, actually. It's a Dao Shraddha. And Rupa Goswami explains that this Shraddha means faith in Shastra. So you have to accept the Shastra with faith. And then from there, one should have a goal. the devotional service should be, and the practice should be goal-oriented. Sankhya purva kanama gana nativi kalava sani krito. As Srinivasacharya explains how the six Goswamis of Vrindavan had a measured way of practicing devotional service. Every day they counted how much they did, because the mind's very tricky. You may say, I did enough, the mind will say, I did enough yesterday, today I won't do anything, and then 10 years later you're still not doing anything. So one has to regulate the mind by having a clear goal and keeping on a schedule, having a regulation for the mind. And Krishna recommends this in the Bhagavad Gita, that you can control the mind by keeping it on a tight schedule, moving from one shastrically approved item to the next. Tat-tat karma pravartana. There are various activities that one can perform. Also, the activity of going out into the world and teaching Krishna consciousness to others is an excellent way to observe one's own mind and the minds of others. Because, as for instance, if you go out for book distribution, which is a way in which you'll meet many individuals, and you'll be able to observe their various states of mind, and you'll be able to observe your states of mind in relationship with theirs. You can see people, for instance, when we go out to distribute books. Oh, something, when I was just in Pune, we were in Pune, we had a monthly Sankirtan festival where we all went out together, about 80 devotees, to distribute books on MG Road and other places. So I was experimenting, because this is a great experiment in consciousness, to go out and meet people and introduce them to the Shastra. And so I was saying to people, I said, you look spiritual. And I'd stop them, I'd say, I'm from California, where are you from? They'd say, I'm from here in Pune. And I'd say, I love Pune, great. And I'd hand them a book, I'd say, here, please take a look at this. This is for you, from America to Maharashtra. And then I would tell them that they look spiritual. It's interesting how the mind reacts to that, people's mind reacts. If you've ever had the experience, if you walk out of your ashram and someone comes up to you and says, you look tired, how do you feel? You start, you're like, yeah, maybe I am tired. As somebody comes up and goes, you really look terrible, how do you feel? You were feeling all right, but then all of a sudden they say, you look terrible, then you start to feel terrible. And what I found in this experiment, going around to meet people in various parts of the world, I say, you look spiritual. And suddenly, there's a bypass to the mind, because the fact is they are spiritual. And suddenly they think, oh yeah, I'm spiritual. And then I ask them this question, what's your secret? And then you'll notice that people have a secret according to the mode of nature they're in. Oftentimes, in very rowdy areas where people are carousing, they say, what's your secret? And they go, oh, I drink a lot of whiskey, or I smoke ganja. And they relate to that as being a means through which they're spiritual. And other people in the mode of passion, that was ignorance in case I didn't mention. And then in the mode of passion, people may say something like, oh, I work hard and I live a good, clean life. And then in the mode of goodness, they might say something like, oh yes, I know all about this, I practice yoga. And you can see that there are gradations of minds and our interaction with them just by presenting the same information to each person and interacting with them. And you can also see the way in which the mind accepts and rejects, and how it can change. I call this the mantra effect, because in Lord Ramachandra's pastimes, Kaikeyi was perfectly happy to have Lord Ramachandra installed on the throne, until Mantra started needling her and saying, this isn't a good idea. And then within hours, she completely reversed her position. Has it ever happened to you? that you changed your mind about something due to outside influence? Say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So not only possible, it happens all the time because the living entity is tattasta and open to suggestion and the influence of the environment. So one can take up the process of Krishna consciousness by eliminating the dependence on the material world, understanding categorically that it is not beneficial to interact with the sense objects for anything outside of my service, which is regulated by the Shastra and the Guru. And then one may make some goal in Krishna consciousness. This is extremely stimulating, very practical. If you take time to write down your devotional goals, then your mind will immediately start to pursue them. And then, in order to accommodate that pursuit, you may then make a schedule and stay on your schedule. It's like if you decide to chant 64 rounds today and you write it down, you make that your goal, then your schedule for the day will change. Do any of you have a schedule today? 1, 2, 3 people. Okay, there's room for scheduling. Your schedule might change. You may take the long route around so you don't have to talk to anybody to finish your 64 rounds. Because you know if I walk through the assembly, I'll be stopped 3 or 4 times and I'll use up half an hour. So our life can adjust accordingly. So these are 3 practical things. So now we'll take some reflections because we have 12 minutes left. And we'll just reflect back anything that you heard so far and we'll try to discuss it more. And Nagar Kirtan looks like he's ready to go.
I like that quote you gave about the philosophy. He said that we don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are.
Yeah. And people interpret things variously, even though they're standing in the same place. Yes, Prabhu?
In the third book, Prabhupada says that we have no friend, or Hamsa said we have no friends or no enemies, yet still we have friends. We don't walk around in a neutral state like that. We have associations, some friends, some we're not so close to.
So what about it?
Yes, is that okay?
Yeah. As is mentioned, there's a way in which all of the ways that we interact with the world must be connected to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's ample instruction in the Shastra about how to interact with various kinds of people in the world. For instance, advanced devotees, Ishvare Taradineshu, Bali Sheshu Dvisatsucha, Prema Maitri Kripopeksha, Yakuroti Samadhyamaha. The Madhyama Adhikari sees the Supreme Lord and cultivates love and sees and understands who are devotees and cultivates appropriate friendships, sees the innocent and tries to pour in as much mercy as possible. And then also sees those who are envious and avoids them. So just that instruction in and of itself is enough of a guide to help us move throughout the world in a proper way. And then there's more specific instructions about association with devotees. For instance, in the Upadeshamrita, Krishneti yasya giritam manasaya driyeta dikshasi che praniti vishta bhajantamisham shushushaya bhajana vignamana nyamanya nindari shunya hridimipsita sangalabhya. For those of the people you see that say Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna,
then in your mind you offer obeisances. You just appreciate that there's a wonder here that this person was able to utter the name of the Lord. And then for those who have evolved spiritually and come to make a vow to chant Hare Krishna under initiation, Those people you can take the trouble to bow down to. And then those who have become advanced by the process, one should hang around outside their door, try to get an appointment, you know, get some instruction, and so forth. And so there's various ways in which the Shastra is meticulous about explaining how we can interact with the world in the context of Krishna consciousness.
So sometimes when you are in exactly here, this my new shoes, I have lost it. Then you make a mind, okay, if somebody is more wicked, then he has taken, and then you see that some, mostly the temples we find there are many people who take the shoes. So I just try to settle our mind that whatever is happening is okay.
Yeah. The other day, Nagar Kirtan lost his phone while he was taking a shower in the Brahmacharya ashram. And then, you know, of course, we didn't speculate very much, but one could have, like, how could this have happened and so forth. But it turned out a monkey took it, reached in and took it out of the window. Man was riding on a train, and then he saw a beautiful woman get on the train. And the train was getting more and more crowded, and he took a fancy to this woman. His mind was attracted. So they went into a tunnel, and the lights went out. And then people were jostling in the train, and he felt some was bumping up against his arm, and he thought, that's the attractive woman. I saw how she was moving this way when the lights went out, and now she's closer. And then in his mind, he thought, well, maybe she likes me. You know, she knew I was over here, so she probably moved over. And then he thought, we might get married. And, you know, my parents are going to be really proud because, you know, they always told me I was a loser and I'd never meet anybody, and look, there she is right there. I'm going to get a house. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to get a house. We're going to live in that house. We're going to have the best kids. And all of a sudden, they burst out of the tunnel. The light comes in. And it's an old, decrepit man bumping up against him. Oh! And he jumps. And the whole existence of my happiness and distress in the material world, it happens on this kind of basis. It's an illusory impression created by the conditioning of my mind. And I'm interpreting the environment constantly like this. However, one is advised to be equipoised and see that everything is going on in a uniform way in the material world. Even one shouldn't criticize or blame others, because one can see that the universe works uniformly by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one should interact with people in a way that is favorable to one's Krishna consciousness without making enemies. Yes, Prabhu.
It's like you were telling Guruji that mind terror with these. So mind tells many times stories about us, like for example, discussing the problem again and again based on our past conditionings. Make up our past conditioning present condition. In a way, like you have been like this. It's like, for example, when we say, when you have the thing that, like, discussing the problem again, and it's like, you are nasty. So the mind will act by default in that way. Is it like that? And what to play that?
Yes. The mind becomes conditioned, and therefore by default, I act in various ways. However, this process is reversible. And the prescription is, as I mentioned, one should have a master, one should have a goal, and one should have a schedule. And one of the goals is to hear about Krishna. Devahuti asks Kapiladeva, how is it possible to become free from the influence of the mind? Because since the time immemorial, I have considered, and even now I consider, that I am my body. And I don't see the separation between myself and the body. How can I become free from that? Kapiladeva answers that one should hear for a long time. And then he comments that the subtle body of the living entity becomes dissolved by the process of devotional service in the same way that food, when it goes into the stomach, dissolves and is distributed to the various parts of the body, even without one's knowledge. So one should go on hearing and also practice the etiquette of spiritual life by interacting with various entities in a proper way. And then one can retrain the mind to become spiritual. Krishna also says, when instructing the sages, that one should cultivate the mode of goodness in all of one's activities. He even mentions details that you should drink clean water. You should live in a clean environment. And by rising from the modes of ignorance through the mode of passion to the mode of goodness, then one can then be within striking distance of coming to the Shuddha Sattva. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam Yariyate Tatra Puman Upavrita. Sattve Chitasmin Bhagavan Vasudevo Yadhok Sujome Namasa Vadhiyate. Which means that, and once you come to state of Shuddha Sattva, Vasudev, then you can see the Supreme Lord for yourself directly. He's revealed when one comes to that position. So it's a cultivation.
And he said that you are looking nice and looking beautiful, you are spiritual.
I didn't say that, I said spiritual. I didn't say nice or beautiful, I said spiritual. And there's a difference between that. Because when you say nice or beautiful, this may be taken as false and flattery. However, there's a brilliance to this being straightforward. When I say you look spiritual, I'm actually looking at people and thinking, hey, how is it that their body is animated by the soul? And it reminds me constantly over and over again. There was a man sitting on his motorcycle, just dark glasses on. He was a very large man. And I went over to him, and this was on MG Road in Pune. And I asked him these questions. And one of the devotees said afterwards, he said, it was like he was hypnotized by these questions. This question, you look spiritual, what's your secret? And then suddenly the soul reverses the thought pattern and starts thinking, yeah, why am I spiritual? Why aren't I spiritual? What am I? And this is a profound experience for people. What to speak of then if you hand them a book that gives them wherewithal to carry out the process by which they'll come to understand it? This is a momentous occurrence in the life of the jiva. Sorry, go ahead.
Like Brahma Maharaj is advising in this case his father, give up this asuri power. So this advice sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. This kind of advice, and we need some level of purity or attachment or selflessness when we do that. But in this case, Hiranyakashipu didn't take it. So sometimes we advise some people, give up this way. It's not good for you. And we are selfless, but they don't take it. So, how do we take all this phenomena in our understanding that I am really giving good advice to this person, and this person is not listening?
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a man to wisdom, but you can't make him think. Don't try to force people. You just go out and look for people who are already open. This is what the Shastra says. Don't try to convince every single person. Rather, go out and find people who are innocent and then pour in as much as mercy as possible. As far as giving people instructions, one has to be very careful because some people sign up for instructions. And even those who sign up, like if you have a disciple teacher relationship with somebody, even then you have to be a little careful. It's like, are you sure you can handle this, Sonny? Not sure, Guruji. Don't be too heavy. But regular people, you can't just walk up and tell them stuff because nobody wants to listen to anything. You can't tell your parents anything, can you? You just have to be nice to them and bring prasadam. Unless somebody signs up and signs a little sheet and says, I'm signing up for you to instruct me, then you can do that. So when you go out into the general public, you have to be very much aware of people's psychology and complement their psychology in such a way that they can open their heart so that you can pour in mercy as much as possible. Leaving a good impression with people is a good start. That's it. The bell tolls. I think we're done, Shruti. Panchagota Prabhu said I can go on. Okay, Shuri Prabhu.
The last comment you made was so good because I've noticed that over the years that the devotees who do well on book distribution are the ones who look for the people who are open and could be interested and don't worry about the others, and the people who try to force the others get frustrated and don't do near as many books.
Yeah, I read the long commentary to the verse I quoted, Ishvare Taradineshu, and Jiva Goswami says, when you avoid the envious people, when you do so, you should also pray for them. And you should also meditate, how could I do better for them in the future, something I could do for them. In this way, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that the best way to control the mind is to think how to do good for others. And if you have that, also, I read once in a book, how to stop worrying and start living. It should be on the nightstand of every temple president. It's written by Dale Carnegie. And he says in there, when you're fully absorbed in anxiety because of some personal situation in your life, the way to come out of it is to think of how to serve somebody else. It takes you out of your own limited little universe of the mind where you think everything's so important. And so Krishna consciousness, jive doi Krishna nam sarva dharma sar. This is our mission statement. This is how to give mercy to the jivas. If you think about that 24 hours a day, your devotional practices will be fully effective. And if you don't, then they become niyamagraha and boring, and then your mind will be distracted to materialistic activities. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to all the temple devotees, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nitai Gaura Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitai Gaura Hari Bo, Nitai Gaura Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Nitai Gaura Hari Bo. Vajshakalpadurvishcha kripasnabevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha nantakoti vaishnaviniki jaya.
Nacharyar marman. Hey! Nacharyar marman.